Anya headed into the crowd without looking back. She'd seen more than she wanted to. A young female reporter with blonde highlights held out a microphone while a camcorder operator trained his sights on Anya.
Anya! Anya!
Another journalist turned to Anya.
Miss Craig, what kind of help do you expect to give Detective Chief Inspector Westcott regarding the Mr. Hyde killings?
Anya ignored them and headed for the other end of the street. A few of them followed her, but gave up when she hit the cross street. Caller ID showed it was Doug Morrell. She didn't want to take the call, but she knew if she didn't, Doug would just keep calling back. Just as she started to answer, a dark Jaguar S-Type glided to a stop at the curb. Two men holding pistols emerged.
Mr. Creed, get in the car, please.
The speaker was a man of medium height and Asian ancestry. He held the pistol with a steady hand. For a moment, Anya hesitated.
If you attempt to flee, I will shoot you in the legs and pull you into the car.
You'll shoot me with the police just up the street?
And I'll get away with it. They are compromised in this area. Before they can mobilize and get here, we'll be gone. Now get in before I have you put in. We won't be gentle.
Anya folded herself into the back seat of the car. Another man, also Asian, sat in the front passenger seat. He held a pistol in his lap. She was sandwiched between the two men. The car pulled into traffic as smoothly as wax running down a candle.
Do you want to tell me what this is about?
The man in the front passenger seat turned to face her.
It's simple. We want the magic lantern Edmund Bestwick purchased from the antiquities auction.
I don't know where it is.
That's too bad. My employer would not believe you. It would be better if you knew where the lantern was.
Why would anyone think I knew where it was?
Because Edmund Bestwick has shown you the lantern.
No, he hasn't.
Then he planned to. My employer knows this.
Planned to? Didn't.
My employer would believe you are lying.
Why would I lie?
I only asked you so that we could stop and pick up the lantern before I take you to him. It's too bad you don't know. He is a very determined man. Many people fear him, and with good reason.
How did you find me?
One of the men sitting beside Anya showed her his cell phone. The picture of her talking with Detective Chief Inspector Westcox. He grinned.
We have been watching you. We only just missed you at the hotel.
The commander flicked his gaze to the rearview mirror.
Panage Janwa!
A scowl darkened the face of the man beside Anya. He put his cell phone away. Even in the shadows of the car, Anya saw the tattoos ringing the guy's neck. As with the Japanese Yakuza and the Russian Mafia, in the Chinese triad, tattoo designs were badges of office and warnings to everyone else. Since she didn't know where the magic lantern was, she had to escape. Her captors wouldn't hesitate to harm her. The only edge she had was that they hadn't been given permission to kill her, she hoped. At a traffic light, the car came to a stop. The man in the passenger seat turned on the radio. Anya quietly readied her mind and body. Then she threw a back fist toward the man on her right, who caught her arm. So she headbutted him in the face. The man lapsed into unconsciousness. As the other man tried to bring his pistol into play, Anya fell into the lap of the unconscious man. She kicked her second attacker in the face, slamming him against the window. He dropped his pistol. Though he struggled, Anya kept her foot pressed against his jaw to hold him in place. The man in the front passenger seat quickly swung his gun in Anya's direction. Anya seized his wrist, yanked down hard, and snapped his elbow. He dropped his pistol. Anya opened the passenger door and pushed off the guy she had trapped against the car window. Anya rolled onto the street, got to her feet, and immediately vaulted to the back of the car, heading for the roof. Bullets ripped through the back windshield and thunked into the car's roof. She ran across the hood of the car and leaped onto the next stopped vehicle. Jumping, vaulting, and changing directions, Anya crossed the stalled traffic. She reached the sidewalk just as the light turned green and ran. At the corner of the nearest building, she risked a quick glance back. Anya ducked out of sight. She dared another look. Two of the men had started after her, but their hearts weren't in it, and they'd retreated to their vehicle.
Quitters.
Anya resumed running. Several blocks later, Anya slowed to a walk. Thankfully, London stayed busy nearly 24 hours. She called Edmund Beswick's cell several times, but didn't get an answer. She also debated calling the Metro Police, but decided against that until she knew more of what was going on. Detective Chief Inspector Westcox was going to have a lot of questions, and she didn't have any answers. Doug Morrell called again, and this time she picked up.
Hey.
I need you to do me a favor.
Me? I was calling you.
Still need the favor, Doug.
Fine. What did you find from the police?
What?
I saw the pictures on Twitter. You and Detective Scarecrow.
His name is Westcox.
Oh, whatever. Man looks like an advanced warning for a famine.
He's not that thin.
Your perspective is skewed because you're always looking at mummies and skeletons. Skinny living guys must look obese to you.
Let's talk about the favor.
Let's talk about Detective Scarecrow.
Westcox, get his name right. The lawyer will need to know it.
Lawyer, did you do something?
No, but the chief inspector is threatening to deport me if I don't stay out of his investigation.
He can't do that, can he?
Not if I have a lawyer, a good one.
We do have a good one.
Why are you whispering, Doug?
We're having a council meeting.
Who?
Then it clicked. Doug Morrell belonged to a group of would-be vampires. That was one of his hobbies.
Right. You're with the Bat Boy Legion.
Did you find out anything more about Mr. Hyde?
No.
Why not?
Because there's nothing to tell.
Mr. Hyde just took his fourth victim.
I know. I was there.
Oh, yeah. The Twitter feed. And there's a couple of YouTube videos up now.
Oh.
In fact, I think maybe Chasing History's Monsters is the only program not getting video of you meeting with Scotland Yard.
Shh, you'll wake the baby vampires.
I'm just saying.
Westcox isn't with Scotland Yard, he's with Metro. And he called me over when he saw me at the crime scene to warn me away. Actually, warning is too soft. It was definitely a threat.
Well, we're not going to put up with that crap. He's not going to threaten us and get away with it. We're going to follow the Mr. Hyde story no matter where it goes.
You do realize that I'm the only person in danger of going to jail, don't you?
There's Igor.
He's missing in action tonight.
What? He should be there with you.
I need the favor.
What favor?
I filled out paperwork on Edmund Beswick.
Professor Beeswax?
I need his home address.
Don't tell me you couldn't get that from Professor Beeswax. I mean, come on, Anya. A professor of reading. This should have been a slam dunk.
He's a professor of literature. Are you sure you went to college?
Business degree with a minor in video productions. Got the diploma on my office wall.
Oh, I hadn't noticed it amid the clutter of action figures and comic books.
Hey, graphic novels.
I need Beswick's address from the file.
Do I look like a walking computer?
Oh, you don't go far without your computer. Just look up the information for me so you can go back and play with the other vampires.
We don't play.
Doug put her on hold. After a couple minutes, Doug was back on the line with the requested information.
And keep me up to date. We're paying for your little trip over there, and we don't want to have to put this program together from YouTube videos. Make sure Detective Scarecrow keeps you in the loop.
I'll get right on that.
She broke the connection and tried Edmund's number one more time. Still no answer.
Where are you?
Taxi!
A few tense minutes later, Anya got out of the cab in front of Edmund's apartment building in Chelsea. She walked up to the security door. Frustrated, she rang Edmund yet again, but he still didn't answer. She retreated to the back of the building and spotted an old metal fire escape. Anya leaped up, caught hold of the bottom rung on the ladder, and was pleasantly surprised when the ladder rolled down more quietly than she would have figured. For a moment, she lingered in the shadows, watching the windows of the back apartments to see if any lights came on or if anyone looked out to check on the sound. Satisfied, Anya went up the ladder. There was still the chance that someone could have called the police, but she was willing to take the risk. On the third floor landing, she stayed low, duck walking under two windows to reach Edmund's flat. The window was locked. The room was dark. When she peered inside, she couldn't see anything. Grateful for her own effort to keep some sort of tools close to hand, she took out a Leatherman multi-tool and opened the longest blade. Working carefully, she ran the blade around the glass to unseat the pane. When she'd finished, the pane popped out easily, and she set it aside. She folded the knife and put it away. Then she stepped into the flat. Inside the room, after negotiating a small sofa, Anya moved to one side and waited for her vision to acclimate to the darkness. She also listened intently. Someone in another flat was watching television. Eyes adjusted, Anya looked around the small studio flat. It was basically a tiny office under a mini loft that held a modest bed. Two separate areas for Edmund to work and sleep. Clutter covered the floor. Most of the mess was books and papers, but Anya knew Edmund wouldn't have left them like that. He was responsible for the corkboards on the walls and the books piled on the small dining table, but not for the haphazard way everything had been thrown. Front door was ajar, and light from the corridor leaked in. Someone had broken in. Remaining calm, Anya closed the drapes over the windows and crossed the room by memory to find the lamp mounted on the wall. She switched it on with a curled knuckle, and soft yellow light filled the studio. She closed the door with her foot, then picked up three of the biggest books she could find. She used her sleeves to cover her hands.
No need to prick the interest of any would-be Sherlocks.
Moving quickly, she stacked the books against the bottom of the broken door. They wouldn't keep anyone out, but they would serve as an early warning system if anyone tried to enter. The small desk had evidently once held a notebook computer. A network cable lay abandoned on the desk. She checked through the drawers, but it was obvious they had been searched. Judging from the clutter in front of the desk, the searchers had simply emptied the drawers onto the floor. There were no thumb drives, no disks, nothing that could have been used to store files. A business card file folder lay abandoned upside down. Evidently, the searchers had been instructed to find anything high-tech. Again using her sleeves, Anya picked up the folder and flipped through it. Most of it was contact information for various agencies, libraries, library staff, other Oxford professors, plumbers, and electricians. She guessed that Edmund didn't trust his computer to remember everything for him.
I don't blame you.
She didn't entirely trust her computer either. That was one of the reasons she maintained her hard copy journals as well as her private blog.
Hello.
One of the cards caught her attention. Gaetano Carlini stood out in a heavily embossed but simple font against the grayed image of a rabbit peering over the edge of a top hat. The number on the front of the card was to the club. With difficulty, Anya extracted the card from the plastic holder using her sleeved fingers. When she flipped the card over, she found another telephone number. Feeling a little better, she tucked the card into the back pocket of her jeans, then continued her search. 20 minutes later, Anya was satisfied she'd combed the entire flat. Edmund Beswick lived the cramped life of a confirmed scholar with too much to do and too little space to do it in. Although Edmund had spoken proudly of the collection of magical props he'd assembled, only a handful of small things occupied the built-in bookshelves in the office area. Decks of playing cards, coins, scarves, cups and balls, and the like shared space with the books on magic.
I'm guessing you keep the real collection someplace else.
Anya returned to the card file and flipped through the thick plastic pages till she found three business cards for storage units.
Yep.
Two of the storage businesses were in Chelsea, and one was in Mayfair. She'd been relieved to discover there was no blood in the apartment. If the men had gotten to Edmund, they'd taken him easily enough. She didn't know if he would tell them about his storage unit.
What am I thinking? Of course he will.
He would be fearful for his life, for good reason, and he wouldn't hold back when asked. Antsy, ready to move, Anya retreated to the window and climbed out. She took a moment to replace the glass pane in the window so others, less altruistic, wouldn't be tempted by an easy mark. Then she clambered back down the fire escape. Anya bought a cup of coffee at a pub around the corner and retreated to the back area and the phone. She was happy to find one there, because public phones were a dying business now that everyone had cell phones. She switched off her sat phone because it had a GPS chip in it that could potentially allow police to track her. And after she finished speaking with DCI Westcox, she was pretty sure the man would want to find her. She dialed Westcox's office.
Metropolitan Police Service.
This is Anya Creed. Could I please speak to Inspector Westcox?
I'm afraid DCI Westcox is unavailable at the moment, Miss Creed.
I know. He's working the fourth Mr. Hyde murder. I just left him less than an hour ago.
I understand that, Miss Creed, but DCI Westcox asked not to be disturbed.
A man has been kidnapped, and it might have something to do with Mr. Hyde. Do you think that will interest DCI Westcox?
Wait a tick, Miss Creed.
Anya sipped her coffee and waited anxiously. She didn't know if Edmund's disappearance was connected with the Mr. Hyde murders or not, but it was a way of getting Westcox's attention. She didn't have to wait long.
Miss Creed, where are you?
Professor Edmund Beswick has been kidnapped.
Who is he?
I don't have a lot of time to get into this. I'm trying to find him, and I think it would be better if you were looking too.
Come into my office. We'll talk.
Haven't you already sent someone to pick me up? I don't know what Professor Beswick is involved in.
The Mr. Hyde murders?
I doubt it. Saying that was the only way I had of getting your attention.
That also constitutes interfering in a police investigation. I'll have you up on charges.
Fine. If that's what it takes to get you looking for Professor Beswick, do it. In the meantime, he needs to be found. His life is in danger.
What makes you so certain of that?
Because the men looking for him also kidnapped me.
Really?
Yes, right from under your nose. Now that I think about it, maybe calling you is a waste of time.
Miss Creed, you're not doing much to endear yourself to this office.
You're not very endearing either, Inspector. I need you to help me find my friend.
I was given a report only a short time ago. Something about a shooting involving an automobile loaded with possible Asian gangsters and a young red-haired woman spotted fleeing the scene. Would you happen to know anything about that?
Have those men been taken into custody?
Not as yet. We're searching for them. Nor do I intend to discuss this over the phone with you, Miss Creed. We'll talk in my office.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Inspector, but I'm going to decline for the moment.
That course of action wouldn't be prudent.
With all due respect, you weren't in the back of that car when the guns came out. I like my chances on my own at the moment. Find my friend. Then I'll be happy to speak with you.
Anya started for the front of the pub, noticed the police car pulling to a stop out on the street in front of the building, and headed for the back door. She was in the wind before the police arrived. A few blocks from the pub, Anya stopped at a bodega and used the payphone. She called the number she'd found for Gaetano Carlini's home.
Hello?
It's Anya Creed. I'm sorry to be calling so late.
Ah, Anya. It is late, isn't it?
Or early, depending on your point of view.
Indeed. Are you all right?
I am, but I'm afraid something's happened to Edmund. He's not with you, is he?
No. Why would he be with me?
I was just hoping he was there because he's not at home.
Anya quickly brought Gaetano up to date on her attempted kidnapping and Edmund's probable abduction.
Oh, dear. You've gone to the police?
That required a further explanation.
I see. I could, as Edmund's friend, insist that something be done to find him. You said this inspector's name is Westcox?
Yes. But I was hoping you might be able to help out a little more.
How so?
What do you know about the magic lantern Edmund bought from the auction house?
Only what he's told me, but I can find out more. I have a number of contacts throughout the city. I'll try to uncover what I can.
That would be great.
What about you? Are you safe?
I think so.
But you can't go back to your hotel, can you?
Not without a forced audience with DCI Westcox, and he might be successful in putting me on the first plane out of London.
Well, we won't let things go that far. Meanwhile, it's plain that you can't do anything else until we know more, and you require safe habitation while we look. Would you feel comfortable coming here? There's an extra room in my quarters.
You don't mind?
One of my neighbors is an old spinster who is convinced that, because of the magic, I am in league with the devil. I can't wait for her to catch a glimpse of you arriving at all hours. Meet me here at the shop. I'll put on some of that terrible coffee that you Americans treasure so much. And try not to fret about Edmund. He's a resourceful lad and a skilled escapologist. I'm sure he's handling himself just fine.
15 minutes later, Anya stood in front of the entrance to Carlini's Magic Bullet Club. The morning had grown colder and the fog had gotten more thick. She entered. The weak light in the corridor flared to life. The door on the right opened, and Gaetano stuck his head through. He wore a colorful bathrobe over flannel pajamas. He waved her forward.
Come on, then.
Anya walked through the door. Gaetano led the way back into the dining room.
You haven't heard from Edmund?
No. I've tried some of the friends we have in common, woke them up and worried them as well.
Then he is missing.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Please, sit.
Gaetano gestured to the table he'd set up with a coffee and tea service.
Allow me.
Anya sat, then watched as Gaetano seated himself across from her. He poured coffee and pushed the cup and saucer across. Then he poured a cup of tea for himself.
Would Edmund call you if he was in trouble?
About something like this? Something involving magic? Of course he would. In addition to knowing a lot about legerdemain and the art of illusion, I also know a great number of people. Like, for instance, the auctioneer that worked the estate sale where Edmund picked up Anton de Tilleur's magic lantern. There was nothing special about the sale, merely a descendant of a collector getting rid of items no one else cared about. In the case of de Tilleur's magic lantern, there was another interested party, but he learned of the sale too late to bid. This is where it gets interesting, and perhaps more troubling. Have you heard of a man named Jean-Baptiste Laframboise?
No.
Neither had I. But the auctioneer told me about him. As it turns out, Laframboise is a black marketer. One of those chaps who can, no matter how difficult or how illegal it is, get it for you. For a price.
Laframboise deals in antiquities?
Not as a regular field of operations, no. In fact, the auctioneer inquired after Laframboise to a policeman friend of his, a man in Scotland Yard who deals with forgeries and the like. According to the detective at the yard, he's made quite the name for himself in the drug trade and human trafficking.
Then why is he after de Tilleur's magic lantern?
I have no earthly idea. The auctioneer went on to tell me that Laframboise was quite distraught when he discovered the magic lantern had been sold.
When did Laframboise find out?
He talked to the auctioneer 2 days ago.
When was the sale?
A few weeks ago.
Laframboise just found out about it?
Evidently. The auction was a small thing. I remember that Edmund was worried someone might snatch up his prize. The professors don't make a lot, you know.
How did Laframboise find out about the auction?
My friend didn't know.
How did he track de Tilleur's lantern to Edmund?
Two of Laframboise's bully boys showed up on my friend's doorstep and assaulted him.
He didn't think to tell you or Edmund?
This only happened a few hours ago, and they threatened him if he told anyone. He has a family to think of. He was very scared the whole time he was talking to me. Had I not gone to him and had we not been longtime friends, I don't think he would have told me at all.
There are a lot of innocents involved in this.
Exactly my thoughts. I fear I, too, have been remiss in the assistance I could have given Edmund.
What do you mean?
Edmund was thrilled with his acquisition. I'd promised to help him research the item's history and Anton de Tilleur, and I hadn't. I'm currently endeavoring to correct that oversight by calling in some favors.
There is one other possibility. I was at Edmund's flat. His collection of magic props doesn't appear to be there.
No, he keeps them in a storage unit.
Do you know which storage unit?
Of course I do. That's where Edmund shows off his collection. There's no room at his flat. Let me go change clothes. I have a car around back.
While waiting for Gaetano to get dressed, Anya wandered the dining area and stared at the caricatures. Most of the names were unfamiliar to her, but she recognized the famous ones. She then came across a caricature that she recognized immediately, though the name was new to her. It had been drawn 33 years ago. The man in the picture hadn't changed in the intervening years. He was gaunt to the point of emaciation, had white hair that hung to his shoulders, and a beard that extended to his chest. He held a long staff in one hand and was dressed in a robe and tall pointed hat. She knew the color of those deep-set eyes, even though the caricature had been done in charcoal. Rue. She was aware that she smiled and grimaced at the same time. Rue and Garin Braden were the two people who, like her, were somehow connected to the mystical sword she carried. 500 years ago, Rue had been charged with watching over Joan of Arc, and he had failed. As penance, he and his apprentice, Garin, had been assigned, or cursed, with finding Joan's broken sword, reforging it, and placing it once more in the hands of a champion, an honor Anya often struggled to embrace.
What do you see?
Startled, Anya looked at the doorway where Gaetano stood. She didn't know what to say. Gaetano walked over to her and pulled on a pair of glasses. He studied the picture.
Ah, yes. The fabulous Raymond the Red. He was quite an amazing performer.
Was he? He looks kind of crotchety and unpleasant.
If you can see that, then my father truly captured the essence of this man in his sketch. Raymond the Red had a sweet and sour disposition. You never knew which to expect. Children and women loved him, though.
Seriously?
Oh, yes. I was just a boy when I first met Raymond the Red, perhaps 8 or 9. The adults didn't care for him so much. He was far too opinionated for their tastes, but he certainly had the gift.
The gift?
For magic. He was fantastic. Things appeared, disappeared, and changed into other things. Even as practiced and experienced as the audience here was, there were a number of his tricks no one could explain. It was as though he were truly able to work magic.
Raymond the Red asked to be drawn as Merlin?
No, that was my father's idea. I asked him about it once, but he told me Raymond could be no one else. Shall we go?
Yes.
Since they were moving through the early morning London traffic in Gaetano's car, and wouldn't be easily traced if DCI Westcox had assigned someone to look for her, Anya turned on her phone and called Rue.
What?
Dutilleux's Magic Lantern. Have you ever heard of it?
You called me for a game of 20 questions?
No. Actually, I don't have a lot of time.
Neither do I. I'm in Atlantic City and the tables are running hot. I've got a private poker game set up in 20 minutes.
I'm in London and the police are looking for me. Do I win?
Okay, tell me about it.
I don't have time to go into all the particulars. I'm trying to help a friend. He got mixed up with something called Dutilleux's Magic Lantern from the old Phantasmagoria shows.
I know what a magic lantern is, and I'm familiar with Phantasmagoria. Childish theater for adults. Shameless.
I thought it might be one of those things you sometimes look for. This one's supposed to be cursed.
No, not to my knowledge. I'll have a look around. Later.
Yeah, whenever. I'm sure I can keep the police waiting till you decide to act.
Sarcasm isn't an endearing trait.
It wasn't intended to be.
Did you kill someone?
No.
And you're not with Garin?
No.
Because getting in trouble with the police is something I'd expect from Garin.
It's not like I planned this.
Are you going to be in London long?
Maybe longer than I'd anticipated if this doesn't work out right.
I'll text you the number of a private inquiry agent there in London.
A private inquiry agent? Like Sherlock Holmes? I've got goosebumps already.
Don't be insufferable. Do you want the number?
Yes.
I'll text it to you now.
Just tell me. When I get off the phone with you, I'm turning the phone off. I've got the police looking for me, remember?
How am I supposed to know if anything happens to you?
Even the London police give me one phone call. I'll call you.
You know, I just got a way to do a little gambling. It's truly depressing when an old man can't relax in his twilight years.
As long as you've lived, you've already passed your twilight years.
Don't be impertinent.
Rue gave her the phone number and made her repeat it.
Should you contact her, give her my name. Tell her she will be compensated for her time.
I can pay my own way.
This woman is one of the best I have ever seen, Anya. She'll surprise you. Whatever she tells you to do, or even suggests, don't take it under advisement. Just do it.
All right.
And take care of yourself, Anya. I still find you more interesting than vexing.
Anya remembered to shut off the phone, then dropped it into her pocket.
An old friend?
Yes.
Gaetano was waiting for her to reveal more, but magicians weren't the only ones who could keep secrets. She glanced at the dash clock. It was 2:48 a.m. She decided to wait until later in the morning to call the number Rue had given her, if she didn't have Edmund Beswick back by that time. 15 minutes later, Gaetano pulled to a stop at the curb in front of the storage facility. He got out of the car and fished a walking stick from the back seat. He looked a little embarrassed as he carried it.
I don't like walking into a potentially dangerous situation without some kind of weapon.
Gaetano used a swipe card to open the storage building's security door. He led the way inside. Alert to everything around her, Anya trailed after the big man.
I don't suppose you have a key to Edmund's unit.
No. Then again, locks have never been a problem for an escapologist. I'm certain we'll manage.
Gaetano winked at her and followed the twisting labyrinth without hesitation. Weak yellow bulbs lit the way.
Damn, be careful.
Anya caught Gaetano's elbow and guided him back against the wall. She put a finger to her lips. His face tightened in consternation as his hands worked along the walking stick, but he nodded his understanding. Edging forward, Anya peered around the corner. Halfway down the hall, three men snapped a lock with a large pair of bolt cutters. Their casual clothes gave nothing away, but they kept glancing around. One of them took out a cell phone.
Yes, we're here now, number 327. There are two locks, Mr. Lafamboise. We'll be through them in just a moment.
Anya pulled back around the corner and glanced at Gaetano.
327?
Uh-huh.
Laframboise's men are breaking into the unit now.
Well, that isn't good.
Can I borrow your walking stick?
Gaetano hesitated, then handed it over.
What are you going to do?
Try to keep them from taking Dutilleux's lantern. Once they have that, they might not need Edmund anymore.
Anya focused on what she was about to do, not what might happen. She kept a loose grip on the walking stick and spun around the corner. Calmly, almost nonchalantly, she walked toward the three thieves breaking into Edmund Beswick's storage unit. Anya walked as if she'd been inside the storage facility several times. She acted a little wary, as any woman would, bearing down on three strangers. She didn't meet their gazes, but she could feel them on her, and she nodded politely. She kept the walking stick tucked behind her right leg, but despite her efforts at hiding her weapon, she knew the subterfuge wouldn't last. The ringleader caught sight of the walking stick, doing a double take.
Look out!
He slid a hand inside his jacket. Anya began to swing the walking stick at his head. Then she quickly shifted her grip and pummeled him in the stomach with it. He'd gotten his pistol out, but he lacked the strength to raise the weapon. Anya snap-kicked the gun from the man's hand and sent it spinning down the hallway. Anya finished off her opponent with a line drive to his temple. The man sank bonelessly. Instantly, the man with the bolt cutters lunged forward and snapped the razor-sharp edges at Anya's face. She managed to elude the attempt. He immediately thrust again, and she gave way before him, measuring his stride and getting his rhythm.
Get the lantern, Francois! The lock is open!
Bolt cutter man snapped at Anya again and again. She kept giving ground, not wanting to do battle over the body of the unconscious man. The man lashed out once more. Anya jammed the walking stick into the jaws of the bolt cutters, then twisted hard. The man lost his grip. Anya flung the tool away. The man immediately drew a locking knife from his pants and took up an experienced stance with the blade reversed and laid along his arm.
That's right, girl. Come on. I take your head off.
Anya dropped into a crouch and swung the walking stick only inches off the ground against the man's ankle. The numbed foot gave way underneath him. She blocked a feeble thrust of the knife with the stick as she stood. Then Anya kicked the man in the crotch. He fell over. The knife tumbled from his hands as he reached for his ankle and his crotch. Anya stepped past him and saw that Francois had opened the storage unit door and gone inside. She stepped through the door and was amazed to see all the boxes and crates piled inside. A small stainless steel table, like something salvaged from a hospital, stood against the wall on the right. Several objects sat on it, and chief among them was a lantern. The device looked like a dragon rearing on its hind legs. Crafted out of brass, the dragon held a round glass lens in its mouth. Heavy coats of lacquer covered the dark wood at the lantern's base, but it was scraped and scarred from rough handling and hard years. Francois grabbed the lantern and wheeled around. He wasn't any bigger than Anya, and he had his hands full. The only problem was making sure the lantern wasn't harmed. Slowly, Anya spread her arms out to her side, the walking stick still in her right hand.
Francois, I don't want to hurt you.
He sneered and produced a knife.
You will not hurt me.
Anya smiled. She let go of the walking stick. Francois started forward with the knife held out before him.
Now, go away before I carve the face off you.
Reaching into the otherwhere, Anya drew the sword into the room.
Ah, merde!
Francois backed up.
Mine's bigger. And I promise, I will hurt you if I have to.
Where did you get that?
Where is Edmund Beswick?
The Frenchman looked uncomfortable. Nervously, he glanced past Anya toward the door.
Your friends aren't coming. I made certain of that. Tell me about Edmund Beswick. I'm not gonna ask again.
La Framboise has him.
Jean-Baptiste La Framboise?
Uh-huh.
Where?
In a warehouse on the Isle of Dogs. I don't know the address. The city is new to me.
Is he all right?
Yes. La Framboise gave us instructions that the professor was not to be harmed until we had the secret of the lantern.
Anya!
Moving back cautiously, keeping the sword between her and Francois, Anya peered out into the hallway. Down at the corner, Gaetano pointed at the other end of the corridor. Three Asians in jeans and a whole lot of leather approached the locker. Anya ducked back inside. There was no way those men happened to be here by accident. She looked at the Frenchman.
Who were the Asian guys?
Chinamen. They work for a man named Puyi Jin.
Who's he?
A triad boss. He hired La Framboise to find the lantern.
If your boss is supposed to get the lantern for him, why is Puyi Jin sending people after me?
Once my boss figured out where the lantern was, he tried to cut a new deal with Puyi Jin. They haven't reached an accord.
So whoever has the lantern gets to negotiate the new deal.
You see how it is.
Great. Your boss gets greedy and I've got Chinese gangsters after me. Do you know why everyone is after the lantern?
No.
Do you realize it's supposed to be cursed?
La Framboise didn't mention that.
Well, now we've got the triad out in the hallway. You'd think the curse is working.
Anya considered for a moment. Three guns against a sword in limited space. Needing other options, she glanced around the shelves looking for anything useful. Edmund had a storage chest against one wall that had paraphernalia from his magic act.
Don't try anything.
She looked through the contents, searching desperately for an advantage.
Anya!
Rang Wo Moon Ba, Jogo Kwai Su.
Spotting a box marked flash paper, Anya grabbed several sheets and a Zippo lighter. The next shelf yielded a gallon jug of cleaning solvent. She grabbed that too as she hurried back to the door.
Anya Creed!
She opened the gallon of solvent and emptied it at the edge of the door. She hoped the fire extinguisher out in the hallway would be enough to take care of the fire.
Come out! Otherwise, we're coming in to get you!
Francois shifted nervously farther back in the storage unit.
What are you doing?
Trying to save us. Get ready to run.
Anya watched as shadows fell across the doorway. She held the lighter and the flash paper ready. A moment later, a young Asian man rounded the corner and came into view of the doorway. Metal studs glinted on his face, and tattoos snaked up from his neck to his chin. He held a pistol before him. Satisfied that Anya wasn't holding a weapon, he grinned.
I have her!
Anya lit the Zippo and ignited the flash papers directly in her assailant's face. She then dropped the Zippo to the floor, setting the solvent instantly aflame. The gunman's solvent-coated feet caught on fire. He backed away, but his finger was on the trigger. Anya pursued, jumping over the solvent trap. She punched him in the throat and ripped the pistol away from him. Anya moved out into the hallway and used the man for cover. The two other men with guns were standing outside the growing pool of fire. Anya shoved the staggering man into the others and tossed the captured pistol away. With her right hand now free, she reached for the sword. She stayed low as she stepped over the flaming gangster. The man was too distracted by kicking his shoes off to be a threat at the moment. Anya threw her left arm across her face as she charged, keeping the flames from her face and hair. The two remaining triad members took hasty steps back from the fire and their fallen comrade. Anya swung the sword and disarmed the man on the left. She set her left leg, pivoted, and drove her right into the man's face. The second man whirled on her. Anya dropped into a crouch and the bullets flew over her head before thudding into the wall behind her. She stepped forward and drove the sword into the man's shoulder, just deeply enough to cause him to drop the pistol. The man stumbled back and clasped his good hand over his injured arm. Anya kicked him in the crotch. As he bent forward, she drove a knee into his face and left him sprawled on the floor. The man whose shoes she'd set on fire had scrambled out of them and was batting at the sparks on his pant legs. He caught her looking at him and quickly backed away. The fire in the hallway licked at the walls, seeking fresh fuel to burn. Anya let go of the sword and sprinted a few steps down the hall to grab the fire extinguisher from the wall. As she returned, the man she'd kicked in the face was scrambling for his weapon. She swung the fire extinguisher. Aiming the fire extinguisher at the base of the flames, Anya yanked the safety pin and squeezed the release handle. A cloud of white chemicals boiled from the nozzle and spewed over the fire. When it finally cycled dry, the flames were out, and only scorch marks remained. Anya ran back to Gaetano and found him nursing a large bump on his forehead.
I'm afraid we've lost Edmund's magic lantern. I tried to stop the Frenchman, but he got away. I wasn't strong enough to overpower him.
That's all right. We've got a lead on where La Framboise is keeping Edmund. That's more than what we had when we came here.
Anya pulled Gaetano into motion and herded him toward the door. Thankfully, none of the combatants she'd left behind were in any shape to pursue. The sign on the door was professional and understated. Bronze letters barely stood out against the simulated wood. Fiona Pioche, Private Inquiries. When Anya knocked, the solid sound told her the wood was merely a veneer over a security door. Fiona Pioche's offices were in the upscale Mayfair district of London. She had a downstairs corner office, making her location even pricier. Anya decided that whoever Fiona Pioche was, she must be doing quite nicely for herself. Gaetano stood unsteadily at Anya's side. He blinked repeatedly, trying to bring his vision into focus.
I'm perfectly fine. Don't worry about me.
I wish you'd let me take you to see a doctor. You could have a concussion.
It won't be the first concussion I've had. We need to find Edmund.
If you're not feeling any better when we finish up here, you're going to see a doctor.
I fear the Chief Inspector will have you locked up and possibly deported if he gets his hands on you.
A young man about Anya's age stood in the doorway. His black hair was neatly cropped, and he wore a tailored Savile Row suit that emphasized his lean athleticism.
Ah, Miss Creed, we'd been wondering when you would show up.
He opened the door wider to reveal a large and expensive office filled with modern furniture. He waved Anya and Gaetano to plush seats in front of the desk.
My name is Oliver Wemyss. You may call me Ollie, if you like. Would you care for some refreshment?
He crossed the room to a service bar.
We have some tea, coffee, a large selection of juices, liquors, beers, wines, and soft drinks.
No, thank you.
And nothing for me either.
Come, Mr. Carlini, you simply must have a spot of tea. I have some analgesics for that headache you're obviously sporting, and you need something to wash them down.
You're right, and thank you. Tea with milk, please.
Ollie poured and brought a steaming cup and saucer over to Gaetano, who managed to take it in shaking hands. Efficient and crisp, Ollie folded himself into the chair behind the big desk and studied the three monitors in front of him. He tapped the keyboard in rapid syncopation, then looked up at Anya.
Were you at the Cleburne storage unit this morning?
How did you know that?
It appears Detective Chief Inspector Westcox has interviewed men taken from there who named you as their attacker.
Preposterous. Those men attacked us.
Now, I'm certain their claims will fall apart once the inspector pulls their records. They each have a long criminal history. I'm quite convinced you'd be exonerated even without Mrs. Pioche's help.
We've got a friend out there who's in trouble. If it's going to be a while before Ms. Pioche can see us...
Ms. Pioche is already working on that. That is to say, I am already working on that. Your friend's troubles, Professor Beswick's kidnapping, is precisely the reason I have broken into the Metro Police Division's files. If I am discovered, they will be properly vexed.
I'm sure they would. But shouldn't we have some kind of arrangement before she starts working?
You should. Miss Pioche assures me that we don't need the usual contract agreement in your case. She considers you special.
Why?
She did not see her way clear to elucidate. Mystifying, actually. I've been through your files and seen nothing that connects you to Miss Pioche.
Until this morning, I'd never heard of her.
Oh dear, she's quite well known. And getting her known to the right people is part of my job description.
Maybe I'm not the right people.
Judging from the background checks I've done on you, you seem to travel in areas outside of Miss Pioche's normal purview, though you both certainly have been in the news regarding aggressive involvement with criminal types.
One of the drawbacks of the job.
As a television personality.
As an archaeologist.
Ah, to be sure. There are any number of unsavory types in that field. Miss Pioche has dealt with some of them as well.
She's an archaeologist.
No, but she has worked for those who are. Yes, Miss Pioche? Of course, Miss Pioche. Straight away. Miss Pioche will see you now.
Oh, was that supposed to be ESP?
Nothing so esoteric, I'm afraid. I have an earbud that keeps me in touch with her. Would you like another cup of tea, Mr. Carlini?
The inner office was at once imposing and impressive. Blonde wood covered the walls, and Italian marble covered the floor. Persian rugs added a layer of wealth that the paintings and sculptures might not have fully expressed. Anya stood in awe of the artifacts that were on such casual display. Arranged as they were, though, she didn't get the sense that they were shown to intimidate prospective clientele. Rather, the pieces were there as keepsakes of an extraordinary life. Drawn to a brass gladiator mask, Anya noted that it hadn't been restored. Instead, it showed the scars of having been taken in battle centuries earlier. And beside it was a ceramic Russian icon, an image taken from Christian stories of Jesus, which showed an angel Anya assumed was Archangel Michael. The figure brandished a flaming sword. The woman sitting behind the desk was in her late 50s. Her silver hair was cropped at her jaw. She wore red lipstick that enhanced her dark blue eyes. Diamond earrings glistened from under her bob. Her white cashmere sweater, black skinny pants, and black boots suggested wealth, class, and good taste.
That one is a particular favorite of mine.
Miss Pioche?
Yes?
I apologize. I just didn't expect to see anything like this here.
What were you expecting?
For starters, a much smaller office.
Rue told you nothing of me.
Only that you were very good at what you do.
I am.
Perhaps coming here wasn't a good idea. I'm sorry to have imposed. Come on, Gaetano. Let's get you to a doctor.
Nonsense. That poor man is almost out on his feet.
Madam, I am quite capable of...
Oh, do sit down, Mr. Carlini, before you topple over.
Quite right, madam.
Ollie, be a dear and ask Dr. Whitehead to come around.
Ollie took out a small, slim cell phone and punched a single digit.
Anya Creed, I apologize for my behavior, and I would like to do my best to help you rescue your kidnapped friend.
Rue said you were the best at this. Please, call me Anya.
I am. On that we can agree. My name is Fiona.
She waved Anya toward a chair beside Gaetano.
Miss Piotr requires your services right away, Doctor. Yes, thank you. The physician is on his way.
Being able to call a physician in so quickly is most impressive.
Not so impressive. He has an office in this building.
Still, proximity alone...
I also own the building.
That, too, is most impressive.
Ollie has been sending me files all morning, since I got Rue's call regarding your predicament. Apparently, Jean-Baptiste Laframboise is a criminal of the worst kind. And you don't know where your friend is.
I have a lead. He's being held somewhere on the Isle of Dogs. And by now, Laframboise also has the object he's been searching for.
How do you know this?
Because it was in the storage unit, and I lost it to one of Laframboise's men.
We lost it.
Ollie, be a dear and have Jenkins bring the car around.
Fiona Pioche stood, opened a locked desk drawer, and took out a small black automatic. She slipped the pistol into place at the small of her back. She turned and opened a hidden compartment in the wall, removing a thigh-length, shapeless beige jacket. She pulled it on.
Would you like me to accompany you, Miss Pioche?
That won't be necessary. Anya and I should be able to handle things for the moment.
Fiona took out extra magazines for the pistol and an elegant cell phone, then dropped them into her jacket pockets.
I'll need you to take care of Mr. Carlini, and keep me apprised of any developments we may need to know about.
Of course.
The woman took a tiny earpiece from a small box and slipped it into her ear. She looked at Anya.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Fiona walked to a back corner of the room and pressed a hidden button. The secret passageway revealed. She wordlessly stepped inside.